Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I'm Dave Gasper, joined as always by Matt Carroll. We are the editors at ReviewingTheBrew.com, and we have baseball to talk about, real games that actually count. We are back with that to talk about, and things are going good in the land of Brewers baseball, and a lot of people were expecting things to go bad, especially out of the gate, but things have been pretty, pretty good so far. The Brewers are 8-3. Through their first 11 games. And we missed last week. First, I got to bring that up. We did miss last week. I was down in Florida.
Why was that?
I was down in Florida. I was avoiding the snow. Apparently, while I was down there, well, 75 and sunny on the beach, and I was getting my tan on, it snowed up here, apparently. Yeah. So I missed that, unfortunately, Matt. I wasn't here to enjoy the suffering along with the rest of you.
Yeah, I don't know if Madison actually got a decent amount. Milwaukee did squat. Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think we even got maybe half an inch in Milwaukee. Oh,
wow. Yeah. All right. Well, nothing, not bad did, for you, but yeah, I was hearing it all around here. Yeah, up in Madison, that it was snowy, it was awful, and I'm just like, hey, it was 75 and sunny. I was drinking pina coladas by the beach, so you know we're having a good time, but. Yeah, so now there's more baseball to get back to and a lot more to talk about. I mean, there's the Rhys Hoskins debacle. I mean, that was freaking right out of the gate, that opening series against the Mets. But now it's kind of all sort of a little bit died down because, you know, we're about 2 weeks past that. Rhys Hoskins slides on Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil cries. Rhys Hoskins calls him a crybaby. And, you know, Johan Ramirez throws at Rhys Hoskins the next day. Hell yeah, a little crying. Hit him with the wah, wah. And, yeah, then Johan Ramirez throws at him. He gets ejected and then suspended and then gets designated for assignment by the New York Mets. And now, all of a sudden, he has been traded for cash considerations to the Baltimore Orioles, who just so happen to be facing Rhys Hoskins and the Brewers in this upcoming weekend series, Matt.
I'm not going to go full tinfoil hat and act like this was some grand conspiracy, but it sure is interesting timing. I will admit that.
It is.
I don't know if he'll even – that's the thing. You don't know if he'll even get into a game at the time that he needs to face Hoskins, that the Brewers even have a – lead, and the Orioles don't have a vendetta against Hoskins as far as I know, so
no. Nope.
But you know, maybe you bring in a mercenary as a just in case. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't speak to what the Orioles do. Is personal for Ramirez. I mean, is he still going to show loyalty to the team that just designated him for assignment? You know, I'm not so sure. Plus, you know, with a new team, I mean, granted, the new team did not change anything between Rhys Hoskins and the Mets. The Mets still hate him, and he's not a big fan of them either, even though he's gone from the Phillies to the Brewers now. That hasn't changed much there. But Johan Ramirez, you know, he's going to a new team. But I don't think the Orioles would be too keen on him doing anything. Being like, hey, dude, we just got you. You're a middle reliever that's kind of bounced around. That's kind of a fringe roster player as it is. Maybe don't go throwing at a guy that we don't have beef with. Unless, you know, Rhys Hoskins has to make another late slide in the second base, and then someone gets upset, and then, you know, it's like, okay, well, we got to throw at Hoskins, and who are we going to call? Well, we got Johan out there. Maybe he wants redemption for missing the first time. But yeah, it's it just kind of adds an intriguing element. Just another little storyline to keep an eye on in this upcoming series. And I've got an article coming out here on Friday morning on the storylines, the juicy ones. There's a couple of them this weekend series with Baltimore. But, I mean, that's one of them now. I mean, Johan Ramirez joining the Orioles just in time to face Rhys Hoskins and the Brewers. But, you know, the Brewers are rolling right now. The Orioles are rolling. They're playing pretty well. And there's a lot of similarities between these teams. But the Brewers, they are playing some really good baseball right now. Pat Murphy has got this offense humming, and this team is racking up the wins.
Yeah, as of this morning, I can't remember if they were I think they were still third in MLB in runs per game with almost six, which is from watching the Brewers last year trying to manufacture offense. That is a far cry from where they were, generally in the bottom half to bottom third of the league in runs per game for a lot of the season. They were at 5.8 or something like that, I think, going into yesterday's game, and they passed that by like the fourth inning, hit their sixth run. I think it was the fourth inning. I can't remember for sure. So further increasing their offensive output. I mean, they've made a few moves, obviously, in the offseason. Rhys Hoskins coming in obviously helps. Gary Sanchez coming in hasn't helped yet. He doesn't have a hit yet, unless he got one and I missed it yesterday. But I don't think he got into the game. You've got Oliver Dunn, obviously. You know, we wrote about him recently. He's been fantastic this year. Was a little bit surprised for him to make it, even though he did perform well in the spring. But he's been great. But I think really you look at – I think one of the big keys – and then obviously Yelich, being old MVP Yelich. But I think one of the big keys is a couple sophomores, you know, kind of stepping up. Bryce Terang has been outstanding, blazing the base paths. And Sal Frelick just had a couple games of a slow start and then started looking like Sal Frelick again. And he's been awesome. And I haven't even gotten to Jackson Churio yet. Like, that's how good this Brewers offense is. You can go guy after guy after guy after guy and point out dudes who are performing, as opposed to a lot of times last year where when they would get into what was considered a hot streak for the team offensively, it was usually like two guys carrying them and everyone else kind of just barely helping them stay afloat. And that's when they were doing well. that's how the team was doing. And right now it's just everything's clicking and damn, is it fun to watch.
It really is. And just this offense, I mean, what they're able to do in Cincinnati here, I mean, eight runs, seven runs, nine runs, 10 runs, something like that in each of the three games. Now, there were supposed to be four games. Now, the game on Thursday here was postponed due to rain. The game on Wednesday had like a two-hour rain delay before it finally got going. But still, the offense was showing out. I know it is Cincinnati, Great American Small Park, as Eric Kratz would call it, and friend of the show, Eric Kratz, by the way. And really, for the Brewers to just kind of have that, I mean, Christian Yelich just being back to what he is. I mean, he's got, what, 5 home runs now on the season. He always plays well in Cincinnati. And just being able to show off the power for Yelich and hitting to and pull power, too. I mean, there's always the talk about, you know, Yelich hitting to dead center to the opposite field, and oh, that's when he's at his best. When we saw him truly at his best in 2018, 2019 with the power, he was pulling the ball. He was able to get out in front and pull the ball. Yes, he does have the ability to go to the opposite field, and that's always great. There's nothing wrong with going to the opposite field at all. But when we saw Yelich at his best, he could pull the ball to right field with power. And that's something that he has been doing quite a bit this season. And that's where it kind of leads us all into the, you know, is he back conversation. But Matt, as you have pointed out before, was he ever really gone?
That's right. He was with us all along, and we didn't even know it. The key that you said there was pull it with power.
Yeah.
A lot of times when he was able to, you know, get those home runs, get those doubles, he was, you know, going opposite field gap or just opposite field in general. But his pulling it was, you know, grounders, pop-ups. Even if he was getting it to the outfield, it was a little more medium contact. He is pulling with authority right now. And overall, too, he's at one of his lower ground ball rates in years. He's at one of his higher fly ball and line drive rates in years. He is that mix is perfect for him right now. And we've seen it. He's got 5 homers already, right?
Yeah.
At this point, you know, he's in 11 games. How long did it take him to get there? I think June last year, did I see? I
can't remember if that one. Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, beyond the first 2 weeks, that's for sure.
Exactly. This is the Yelich that the Brewers paid for. Like, he keeps doing this. That contract's starting to look a lot better, finally. And it happens to coincide with, you know, a couple big signings and the young guys starting to look good. It's been great. And it's helped kind of, I wouldn't even actually say overcompensate for, you know, the weakened pitching staff, because the pitching staff has actually held up very well. The starting pitching hasn't looked bad outside of Aaron Ashby, which really was a lot of poor defense behind him in his start. Most of the starters in their starts have looked good. Joe Ross looked great the other day in his first win since 2021, late June of 2021. Deal Hall has looked solid. Jacob Junis looked good before he hit the IL. Freddie Peralta. Wade Miley didn't go very long, but he looked very good in his first game back off the IL. And then with the bullpen, it's really only been a couple rough outings here and there. For the most part, they've held their ground too. That's how you get a team to be 8-3 out of the gates, is, you know, all those phases clicking the way that you need them to.
Yeah, and that's been fantastic for the Brewers so far, with the question mark in that rotation and the pitching staff, and, you know, how things are going to shake out. Now, granted, it's still early on, and, you know, can they continue to depend on Joe Ross when we get into June and July? You know, same thing with Jacob Junis. You know, obviously he's already gone down with an injury. Wade Miley already missed the first 2 weeks-ish with an injury. Colin Ray, he's been Colin Ray.
I didn't even mention him. Yeah.
Colin Ray's been doing Colin Ray things, you know, just kind of solid, you know, just getting some innings eaten, and just kind of doing what he does. So it's been a solid couple of turns through this rotation. And now they'll get this next one coming up here in Baltimore, Freddie Peralta going on Friday night. And then we start turn number three. So it's going to be a very fun series coming up in Baltimore with the pitching matchups. Colin Ray, he's going to be facing off against Corbin Burns on Sunday. That's going to be another big storyline coming up here in this weekend series. The Burns trade revenge series possible. Corbin Burns can get a revenge game against the Brewers. DL Hall can get a revenge game against the Orioles. He's slated to pitch on Saturday. Joey Ortiz can get a couple of revenge games in. He's been playing a lot of the time there at third base, although so has Oliver Dunn. You know, really, a lot of these guys, I mean, they've been really off to just strong starts to the season. Really, the only guy on this offense that has been struggling offensively, I would say, is Gary Sanchez. You know, he hasn't been playing that much. Monasterio hasn't been playing that much. And Jake Bowers. He's been awful as well at the plate. He's got, what, 2 hits, I think, on the season. He's been fantastic defensively over there at first base. He's made some great defensive plays.
I'm proud of you. You just said a nice thing about Jake.
I know. My question was never about his defense, though. It was always, he's not that good of a hitter.
It's still the first nice thing I've heard you say about him, though.
I know. That's a big step for me. It really is. But reassuring. I know. Thank you. I'm trying to work on myself here. But yeah, it's been... Hoskins has struggled there defensively over at first base. You know, he's had a couple where he just missed a ball that he should have caught. And that's been something that has been tough. We've seen a lot of DHing of Hoskins lately as well, and him just kind of not fully being in there. As I'm looking at the stats right now, I want to pull them up here just to be fully clear on what the numbers are for Jake Bowers. He's hitting 154 on the season. 154.
Yeah.
It's not great, Matt. It's not great. No. 472 OPS. It's not great. But actually, it is still better. Here's a secondary nice thing. It is still better than Gary Sanchez's OPS of zero.
Yep.
Gary Sanchez has not gotten on base at all. And I mean, he's been pretty much just a backup catcher. He's DH'd a couple of times. He just has 12 at bats, but still 0 for 12 to start the season for Gary Sanchez. Woof.
Yeah, but I think that says a lot, the fact that he only has 12 at-bats right now. Pat Murphy, he was bound at the beginning of the year, his first year managing a roster with some new faces on it, to kind of play with things a little bit and, you know, try and see what works, try and see what doesn't, give a lot of guys a lot of time, because you've got to see with players like Jake Bowers and Joey Ortiz and Oliver Dunn and Blake Perkins, who's gotten some run recently and actually looked good in that Cincinnati series. You got to see, you know, what do you have in them? Are they going to be able to be the types of guys who can, you know, take some time off and step in and actually have a decent, you know, day at the plate? You've got to do that with an entire roster. And it sometimes, you know, some guys are going to end up getting, you know, fewer at bats than others just as a result. And Gary Sanchez kind of has been one of those guys because, like you said, if you're working Hoskins in at DH, well, you can't put Contreras in at DH, but you want him, you know, in the lineup if you can. So he's going to be catching, which means Gary Sanchez can't be catching. With Bowers playing as poorly on offense as he is, I certainly wouldn't mind seeing Sanchez and Contreras in the game at the same time, one at DH. But then again, that puts you in that situation where if one of them gets hurt, especially the one playing catcher, now you have to burn your DH, and that's not a situation you ever want to be in. So, you know, that was what always made it difficult with, you know, the Eric Haas thing, made it a possibility. I always thought that maybe they could carry him because then you could do some of these things at DH with these guys, but you lose a lot of flexibility. Obviously, we've been through this whole discussion multiple times.
Yeah. We have the whole decision. Yeah.
But the point is, you know, we're now at a point where Sanchez is not getting a lot of at bats. And maybe it's just a result of pitching matchups and just how things have gone early. Because last year, Caratini, as a backup catcher, he got plenty of at bats. Like, he was able to get.
But he was hitting better. He was getting hits.
He was.
That certainly helps.
That helps you get more games. Yeah.
And I think also, too, we would have seen Gary Sanchez most likely here on Thursday because that would have been a day game, a noon game after a late night game that Contreras was catching on Wednesday with a two-hour rain delay. So Thursday probably would have been the chance for Gary Sanchez to get some more at-bats, but the game gets postponed until August. So, you know, so much for that. And by the time the Brewers play on Friday, William Contreras is going to be ready to go. He wants to be one of those guys that catches every single day. So there's not going to be that many opportunities for Sanchez behind the plate, which is fine because Sanchez really isn't that highly regarded of a defensive catcher. And Contreras certainly has been a very good defensive catcher on that front. On top of the offense that he brings, it's just been phenomenal. But speaking of defensive catchers, we would be remiss if we did not mention this in one of Matt's favorite prospects, and this is the bad news portion of the podcast. Top catching prospect Jefferson Caro is out for the remainder of the 2024 season after a torn labrum in his throwing shoulder that he suffered on a dive back into first base on a pickoff attempt on opening day down there in AAA. So Jefferson Caro does not really get many at-bats down there in the minor leagues this season. He tears his labrum in his shoulder. His throwing shoulder is a very important shoulder. He's got a cannon for a throwing arm. And now he's going to be out for 9 months, which puts him out until January. But he should be ready to go in spring training 2025. But this is just such a blow to the Brewers and for Caro. Because Caro was the third catcher on the 40-man roster. If something were to happen to Contreras or Sanchez, Caro could have been the guy to get that call. He's a big part of the future for Milwaukee. And now he misses out on so much development time this season, missing out on those chances to get those at-bats. And now, I mean, who knows what his shoulder is going to be when he comes back and is ready to play. Because, you know, we saw a torn labrum to Jimmy Nelson when he dove back into first base, and he was never the same after that. Now, granted, Nelson was a pitcher and Caro's a catcher, but still his throwing arm is such a big part of his game. And if it's even slightly less than what it was before, then that's going to be a big hit to Caro.
Absolutely. one of the best, you know, arguably the best defensive catcher in all of the minor leagues. And that's not just me saying that. That's plenty of experts who've said exactly the same thing. Part of what makes him so special. Hopefully that's not the case. The Brewers, you know, medical team has done a really good job getting guys back from injuries. We saw, you know, not saying it's the same thing, but we saw Aaron Ashby get shoulder surgery. We saw Garrett Mitchell get shoulder surgery. They were both good to go coming into this year, and Aaron Ashby is a pitcher. Again, not the same injuries, but, you know, the Brewers do a good job at managing these things and not rushing guys, getting them right before they're ready to come back in. But the parts that's so unfortunate about it is, you know, Caro, after being hurt for a lot of last year, this was supposed to be his chance to get all that AAA action in and then truly be that next part. It was going to be the Wild Bill and Caro show next season in Milwaukee. And now you have to imagine, I know he'll have another year under his belt, but you have to imagine they're still going to want to get him some AAA work next season to make sure that he at least has some of those reps under his belt. So I think that delays quite a bit then, you know, his arrival in Milwaukee. And I'm going to just stop liking catchers, I guess. The catchers in the minor leagues and the org that I like, something always ends up happening to them. So Wes Clark, I don't like you anymore. Matthew Wood. Not a fan. Don't care. Whatever.
William Contreras is the worst.
I hope we never see you. Yeah. Well, no, he's not in the minors. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
He's good. He's solid.
Just got to clarify. Just got to make sure.
Understandable. We want to be safe with all our catchers.
Absolutely.
But no, I'm done. I'm swearing off catchers because bad things only. We have a toxic relationship apparently.
Yeah, I feel like that happens with like so many like it's just like kind of bad luck, like us as sports fans and just kind of like looking at it. Like I have friends and also like my sister, even she does not get like a Brewers jersey with a player name on the back anymore, because every time she does, that player gets hurt or traded. Mm-hmm. Like every single time, it's like I don't want to see them traded. Like I want them to stay here, so I'm just not going to get their jersey. Or I don't want to see him get hurt, so I'm just not going to get a jersey with the name on it. So I'll just get a blank one, and just wear that. And like I've seen plenty of other people do that too. It's like I am like it is a curse every time that I like one or I get some of their merch, they get hurt, they get traded, they're gone, and it's like now you've got that with catchers. Like got to swear off, got to stop liking them, got to stop being like, hey, this guy is great as a catcher. I love my offensive minded catchers. And now it's like, oh well, now another one. Another one bites the dust. Another one gets hurt.
Yeah, for now. Yeah. But no, it's honestly amazing considering the luck that the Brewers have had sometimes with top prospects. I know it's gotten a lot better recently. It's almost amazing that Jackson Chourio has worked out as well as he did, that it's gone almost exactly as planned. He ends up making opening day roster this year and has looked very good. He's done well. He's been just fine in the field. Like I knock on lots of wood,
knock on all the wood all that you can.
But at the very least, it was almost bound to be like, okay, well, Chourio, you know, he makes the opening day roster and he struggles, which would be totally understandable.
That was part of my bold prediction.
To go back to AAA, exactly, and come back later, you know, whatever manner of things would happen to him. And that hasn't even happened yet. He's looked good. He's getting hits. He's got his first career homer. He's cool. Driving in runs. It's the Chourio plan is working. And just for how many times we've been burned, especially by top prospects at times with the Brewers, it's like we almost expected things to go wrong at some point.
Maybe this is baseball karma. Coming back around, the good side of karma coming back around for Keston Hira forgetting how to hit. Because that was the most insane thing, how Keston Hira can go from this hitting savant all throughout the minor leagues and through 2019, hitting 303 or whatever it was, and then all of a sudden just completely forgetting how to hit a baseball and mm-hmm. just being completely just used up and now being in the minor leagues in Detroit. He couldn't even make the Detroit Tigers roster. Maybe that's baseball karma come back around, like, oh, sorry for your hitting savants, you know, forgetting how to hit there. Here's Jackson Chourio as your reward, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. It's been a lot of tough luck, a lot of bad drafts too, you know, especially from that late 2000s, mid 2010s, even extending into late 2010s, so the way some of those guys have worked out, especially with Hira. But hey, that 2018 first rounder, Bryce Chirang, panning out so far. 2019, Ethan Small, man, not really. That one did not pan out. But 2018, Bryce Chirang, he's finally making that quantum leap that Pat Murphy has talked about all spring. He said that Chirang was going to be making a quantum leap this year, which reminds the audience of a certain age of a Scott Bakula show, a fantastic show that my parents made me watch from time to time when I was younger. But the quantum leap for Chirang has really been coming true through these first couple of games. And it's been an incredible sight to see. He's hitting for some power. He just hit a home run there in Cincinnati. But Chirang, a 907 OPS. I never would have thought that'd be possible for Bryce Chirang. And a 907 right? OPS, hitting .342 on the season. It's been phenomenal what he does on top of the great defense that he's bringing at second base every single day. But hitting .342, 7 RBIs, 7 stolen bases, leading the league. It has been an incredible turnaround for Bryce Chirang in year two. And I think that's been a big part of the Brewers' success.
Absolutely. It was going to take, you know, some of the supporting cast stepping up for the Brewers to be successful. You knew Christian Yelich had a good chance to, at the very least, be as good as last year, which was a very solid year. It's nice that he's looking even more like MVP style, but you at least had that to count on. William Contreras, you had a fairly good chance that he would look very good. And then Rhys Hoskins coming in, professional hitter. You know, you had a trio right there that you felt could be your base, and then it would be up to kind of some, again, supporting members of the offense to build upon that and have the
– And Willie Adames, well. Too. Can't forget him.
Willie Adames, part of course, that base. One of the people I haven't even – I hadn't actually mentioned, you know, Wild Bill in those previous group of guys until just now, too. Like, again, going to show just how many Brewers have performed well at the plate to start the season. But Bryce Chirang, it always felt to me like of all the sophomores that he had the best chance of taking that next step. And I know Pat Murphy said, look at this guy, he's going to take a quantum leap. And so, you know, he kind of had that in his corner, but Bryce Chirang really got the full MLB experience last year compared to any of the other guys. You know, even going to Garrett Mitchell, who's, you know, missed a lot of time, came in late 2 years ago and then missed a bunch of time last year. Sal Frelick came in late. Joey Weimer came in at the beginning, but then left late. Chirang, outside of that quick stretch that he had to go down to AAA, he went through it all of last year. He started here, was decent at the start, slumped really hard, got to experience being demoted and having to prove himself and come back, looked good late. Like, that was a whole season of him learning what the majors are like. And so coming into this year, he had more of that just general kind of experience than any of the guys. And so it felt to me like if anyone had a good chance of taking the step forward, it was him, because he had so much to build upon from last year. And lo and behold, look at what he's done. He truly looks like he took all those learnings from last year and kind of, you know, used that to grow essentially for 2024. And it's been fantastic to watch.
Yeah. And when we talked with Brewers hitting coordinator, Brenton Del Chiaro, over the offseason, you know, we talked with him about Bryce Chirang and how he felt he was going to improve in his next season in 2024 here in the big leagues. And he's a big believer in Chirang, in that bat. and getting back to what it is that he's good at. I mean, he's not a power hitter, as you know, Brenton pointed out, and you know, mm-hmm. although he does have a home run there in Cincinnati, it is Great American Small Park, and it was like the first row that he hit it out to. But still, I mean, Terang just getting back to being that contact hitter, just spreading the ball all over the field, and getting on base and stealing bases. That's his game. That's his offensive game. Get singles, hit him, hit a tall field, hit your singles mm-hmm. and maybe some doubles, steal bases, and just be a menace on the base paths. And mm-hmm. that's what he's been able to do. And he's been incredibly successful at it this season. And if he can continue to do that on top of the great glove that he brings at second base, I mean, you got to be happy with that as a Brewers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what you were expecting when you got Terang up. Plus, I mean, he has the best path to playing time of any mm-hmm. of those other guys that we saw last year with Mitchell and Frelick and Weimer. They all play the outfield, mm-hmm. and the outfield has Christian Yelich and now has Jackson Chourio in it, yep. manning the corners. So there's only so many, like, of those three guys, you can only play one of them in center field at a time if Chourio and Yelich are taking up the corners. Now, granted, we did see the experiment of Sal Frelick at third base, you know, and second base there a little bit in the infield in spring training. That's obviously been shelved because of Garrett Mitchell's injury. So Frelick's been playing entirely outfield this time. But still, like, it's going to be tough for those guys to get at-bats every single day in that lineup when it comes, you know, even lefties versus righties, whatever it is, because of the position they play and the fact that there are only so many. Now, granted, you have the DH, you can rotate guys through, but Terang, he could play second base every single day. Mm-hmm. He can. And Frelick and Mitchell and Weimer, they can't all play the outfield every single day while you still have Chourio and Yelich on this roster. And those two guys are not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. You still have to perform, though. I mean, you know, yes, he's got a better path to playing time than, you know, those youngins in the outfield. But at the same time, if Terang came in and struggled at the start of the season, you've got a trio or a tandem in Oliver Dunn and Joey Ortiz. Joey Ortiz was performing, you know, hitting better offensively.
And Ortiz is hitting what, 300?
I know he started off slow. I hadn't checked on him.
Hitting 300. I mean, his OPS is only like 780 something, but yeah, he's hitting six for 20.
So then if Terang had struggled out of the gate, you definitely could have gone Dunn and Ortiz at second and third with maybe peppering in a little bit of Sal Frelick as needed and just Terang when he was able to get, you know, time. There's an alternate universe where it could have shook out that way, even though Murphy loves himself some Bryce Terang, but Bryce Terang has looked even better than those two. And that says a lot because those two have been, as we pointed out, very good to start the season. So you've still got to perform, and Terang has absolutely done that. If he keeps doing that, the Brewers are just going to keep scoring runs. And we love runs. We love them.
We do. In Milwaukee. That we do. We do love runs. We do love scoring them. Absolutely. And it's been a while since we've seen him score at this pace. Yeah. It feels like. Speaking of guys that Pat Murphy just loves and guys that are playing well, Oliver Dunn, who just barely made the roster. He was the last man on the roster. He only made it because Garrett Mitchell got injured there at the end of spring training. And Oliver Dunn has been playing almost every single day, it feels like. He's gotten some DH at-bats. He's played a pretty solid third base, not as good as Joey Ortiz. But still, it's been a really solid third base. No issues there with Oliver Dunn. He's getting a ton of playing time. Mm-hmm. He barely made the team. The Brewers traded a couple of really good prospects to get him, Robert Moore and Henry Mendez. And this guy had no previous MLB experience. He made his MLB debut on opening day. And Pat Murphy trusts him with quite a lot. He's been hitting in the middle of the order. He's been hitting in the five spot a couple of times.
Leadoff.
Leadoff too. Like, Oliver Dunn has just been, you know, another just huge improvement, a huge addition to this team that seemingly came out of nowhere. I mean, obviously we knew he was on the 40-man roster when the Brewers got him, but I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting this kind of solid performance from Oliver Dunn in just his first couple of games.
Yeah. Yeah. again, on fire out of the gate. That's kind of what, you know, part of what led them to try that. Super cool to hear about, you know, Quentin Berry coming up to Pat Murphy and saying, hey, I think we should try Dunn in the leadoff spot. And Pat Murphy saying, you know what, I trust you.
Okay.
Let's give it a shot. Changing the lineup just an hour or two before first pitch to be able to accommodate this idea, and it ends up working that day. So, again, everything's clicking right now, which is super fun to watch. The guys that we expect to do, the guys that we didn't expect to, Oliver Dunn could stand to bring those strikeouts down a little bit. He's around 30% right now, so that's a little up there. But again,
it's a small sample size. We got to remember that it's been a small sample size so far. As great as all these performances have been, it's a small sample size.
Yes. Fully admit that on both sides here, that we know we're taking all of this with somewhat of a grain of salt, but it's still been really cool to watch, you know, for some of these guys, especially like an Oliver Dunn, who first his major league debut this year, he had every right to struggle out of the gate too. And hitting .250 with a .720 OPS. He's got a triple and a homer amongst his 8 hits. He got a couple steals because he doesn't look like a speedster, but he's a speedster like many of the players on the Brewers, which that's, talk about another storyline from the Brewers this year. Stolen bases, that is an emphasis. Again, finally, the Brewers have traditionally most seasons been a base-stealing team, and last year they just were not, which, you know, look at how they did offensively. You know, that's got to be a big part of it. When that's been, you know, part of your recipe for success, and then you just take that out, you end up with, you know, with a lot of those low scoring games. So
I don't think it helped that their manager had one foot out the door. That also may have been part of it. But yeah, it's been great. And we talked about Terang too. I mean, last season he had 26 stolen bases and he was not getting on base much at all. Yeah. I mean, he had a .285 on base percentage. The way if he keeps on getting on base at this rate and his ability to steal bases, I mean, he honestly could lead the league here in stolen bases, which in the last time the Brewers had a league leader in stolen bases, it was actually more recent than I thought. It was Jonathan Villar in 2016.
Oh, okay.
He led the league in stolen bases with a 62, I want to say, something like that, in 2016. Yeah, led all of baseball.
Interesting. I mean, I knew he had some good stolen base years. I guess I forgot that as well, that he actually led the league, so.
Yeah.
Interesting. I boldly predicted a stolen base title for Terang this year. So
absolutely.
On Twitter, it's there. So
it's there. We got receipts. We do. We got receipts.
Right. The receipts.
I thought I was going to have to go all the way back to Scott Petednik, but it turns out
that's funny. That's the first person who popped up in my head.
Yeah. So I know Scotty Poe got over 70 there, but yeah. It's been a while. But I mean, if Terang keeps getting on base, that's right. I mean, Scotty Poe got on base quite a bit that season. If Terang keeps on getting on base at this rate, he absolutely could hit 70. I mean, he's got 7 here already through the first 10, 11 games that he's played. And, you know, in a 162-game season, absolutely, he could get there. I don't know if he's going to get to Ricky Henderson level and hit 100. Probably not. But, hey, it could be fun. It's going to be something fun to watch. And if he keeps on getting on base, it's going to be good because this team is humming. The offense is humming. And just kind of seeing all these young guys take this step forward. And I've heard some people like ask too, it's like, what's behind the offense getting better? You know, it wasn't a change in hitting coach. You know, Andy Haynes has been gone a couple of years. It's Ozzie Timmons and Connor Dawson. They're still there. And just kind of, you know, what's behind this offensive success so far. And I think a lot of it is just these young kids are finally just developing and taking their steps forward. I mean, development isn't always linear. I mean, you're going to see guys struggle in their first season, and we may still yet see struggles for guys like Oliver Dunn and Jackson Churio and all these other young kids. But the experience that they got last year, I mean, you're expecting steps forward from guys like Bryce Terang and Sal Frelick and eventually Garrett Mitchell when he returns around the beginning of June is the projected timeline for him. But Contreras continuing to get better and, you know, really being able to have Ortiz, you know, he got some experience last year in the big leagues, him continuing to get better. So just kind of having these young kids step up, that's really what it is. They've gotten the experience under their belt, and they're taking step forwards in their development and their career. And that's really, I think, what it is largely. It's not a shift in philosophy, I don't think, except, you know, obviously the increase in stolen bases. But really, I don't think it's too big of a shift in philosophy going from Craig Counsell to Pat Murphy there that's behind this offensive explosion. It's just the guys are just getting better as they get the experience under their belt. And what they've done with runners in scoring position, it's been phenomenal. I mean, they're hitting like, what, 500 over the last couple of games with runners in scoring position? Do you remember how many times, Matt, we had the conversation last year about how poor the Brewers were with runners in scoring position? It was a lot.
Many, many times. Yep. Not even just last year. And I know at times.
Like a couple, yeah.
Right. And I know at times it's seemed worse than it actually was, but last year it actually was not very great. Mike Vassallo actually had a tweet about it today. The Brewers lead the league with a 373 average with runners in scoring position. They are almost hitting 400 with runners in scoring position, including 460 in the last four games.
Woo! Yeah.
That is...
It's just, it's music to your ears, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Again, everything is clicking right now.
Yeah. And it's still early.
That right there, that's a symptom of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still early. It's still April. There's a lot of season left to go. But the early signs are positive. And especially considering where everyone was, I think, heading into the season. The headspace just, you know, after the Corbin Burnes trade and all these young kids, it's like, are the Brewers really going to contend in the NL Central? Can they really contend for a playoff spot? And, you know, can they contend for a World Series? Seems like they're pulling back, kind of not trying, you know, yada, yada, yada. That was really kind of all the talk. Not quite as much excitement for the team this year. And so far, I mean, it's been the exact opposite. This team has shown that, hey, you know, as much as we sometimes lament the front office decisions, sometimes those decisions aren't as bad as we initially think.
Right. You also have to there's a lot of wanting to have it both ways that happens, you know, as a fan of any sport. And, you know, when you're hoping for these young guys, these prospects to come up and play and get playing time and all that stuff, that means that you can't sign other guys to be in their spot. So, like, the Brewers went and they spent some money. They spent money on Hoskins. They spent money on Sanchez. They brought in, you know, those are kind of two of the bigger signings. You know, a lot of the other ones were smaller supporting signings. Junis's is like $3-4 million, something like that.
Yeah.
But knowing that you still have Yelich, you still have Adames, who you have to pay, by the way. You still have Contreras, and you have all these young guys. These young guys, if you're saying that we want to see them, we want them to play, we've got this great farm system and it's going to be such a help for the Brewers, well, they all need spots on the roster.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a cost effective. That's a nice side effect of it. It is a cost effective way to work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that team's being cheap. It means that they trust these guys, that it's time.
Yeah.
It's time for them to play. And so that was part of, you know, why a lot of people thought it wasn't a sexy off season necessarily, is because, you know, you didn't have as many of the big signings, but you already have the guys.
That was the sexiest signing they could have possibly made. Getting Jack Contreras on that contract extension. Absolutely.
Yes, I agree.
Although it turns out the Brewers will not be getting a prospect promotion incentive draft pick in case Jack Contreras does win Rookie of the Year or wins MVP in his first three seasons, because players that sign extensions prior to their MLB debut are not eligible, according to Baseball America, to get those PPI draft picks. So the Brewers lose out on a potential first-round pick in the 2025 draft, depending on if Churio wins Rookie of the Year, and so far he's on a solid pace for that. But they lose out on that potential extra draft pick next year or beyond, but they gain the extra 2 to 4 years of control over Churio in his prime and the peace of mind that they are not going to have to trade him at any point. There's not going to be, oh, free agency's coming up. They're going, you know, here's a trade deadline. Are they going to move him? Mm-hmm. We got the peace of mind that that is not going to be happening. He's going to be here 2 to 4 years longer than he otherwise would have, and possibly 3 to 5. I mean, really, considering the Brewers' pays, you know, they would have had to ship him out a year before. But you get that peace of mind. That is absolutely worth losing that draft pick, in my opinion. It would have been nice to have the draft pick, yes, but if getting all that just costs that extra potential draft pick, that is a trade I would make 100 out of 100 times if I'm Matt Arnold, because it's just Churio's is just too good.
Yep, absolutely. It is weird that it felt like no one knew about the whole.
I don't think anyone ever was like when they but when how? They brought in. I think when they brought in the prospect promotion incentive, like this was never part of the criteria saying, oh, you can't have signed a contract extension
but it
prior.
Had to be.
But since they, I mean, it wasn't listed in any of the criteria, but since they put it in, no one has signed a contract extension prior to their debut until Churio and Cold Key. So, you know, we never thought about it before because it had never happened before. But I guess, you know.
But it had to have been documented somewhere.
You'd think, or maybe someone complained to me like hey, like question, clarifying question. What if they sign an extension before? And MLB's like, oh, let me think about that. Because it's supposed to be an incentive to bring guys up. And when you have them signed to an extension, you don't really need an incentive. You already have them signed. They're going to be getting paid. There's no service time issues when you're signed to an 8-year contract extension. Mm-hmm. So I get it, but it's like, hey, this would have been nice to know beforehand. I'm not sure. I don't know if the Brewers were caught off guard by this or not, or if they knew going in that they would lose out on that potential. I don't think they would have cared either way. When you had the chance to sign Jackson Churio to that kind of contract, you do it. But yeah, oh, I think just because this had never happened before, no one had ever needed to clarify it.
I'm curious if teams and players and players union and everything like that all did know this whole time. And, you know, everyone else who isn't necessarily combing through collective bargaining documents every day just didn't. To your point, it had never come up before. And so no one really ever looked for any wording. If that's really what this came down to, it's just weird that all of a sudden it was said to be a thing and everyone was like, wait, really?
Yeah. He meets all the criteria. He's a consensus top 100 prospect. He hadn't lost his rookie eligibility. And he could win a rookie of the year in his first year. He could win MVP in one of his first 3 seasons. That would make the Brewers eligible for getting a draft pick for him. But yeah, with that contract extension, apparently he is not, according to Baseball America. And they are one of the foremost resources for baseball information that there is. So, you know, there's plenty of reason to trust what they're saying here, but yeah, it had never been brought up before, but yeah, the Brewers lose that draft pick, but you get the peace of mind, you get the extra years. That's a trade I'm making every single day.
Absolutely.
And it's been fantastic so far. Going back though, to your point, Matt, on signing or leaving spots open for these young guys and, you know, not signing some of the big, you know, making the big sexy signings to block some of them. I think there have been a lot of complaints about the rotation and not signing another guy. I mean, you're looking at Jacob Junis, who's back on the IL, Wade Miley, who was on the IL for a little bit. You know, you're relying on Miley and Junis and Colin Ray and Joe Ross. It's just a group of journeymen really behind Freddie Peralta, but you have these young pitching prospects coming up right behind them that I think the Brewers are wanting to have those spots for. I mean, DL Hall, obviously, that they got in the Burns trade, they wanted a spot for him. Aaron Ashby, he's going to end up needing a spot. I know his first start didn't go that great, but they're going to want him a spot in that rotation. You got Robert Gasser, who's currently dealing with bone spurs, but they want to see him quite a bit this season. Carlos Rodriguez is in AAA. They want to see him yet this season. You got Jacob Mazurowski, who's down in AA. We could see him this season, but probably not, at least not as a starter. But still, you got these young guys that are going to be coming up that you need to have spots for. And if you sign a guy like, you know, Jordan Montgomery, not saying, you know, Jordan Montgomery would be a bad signing, but he'd be someone who would be in there every single day, and that would take away a potential spot for one of these young guys like Gasser or Rodriguez or Mazurowski, or even Evan McKendry, who could be possibly an option. There's a bunch of different directions that they could go with that group, but I think that's where they're clearing that they left those spots purposefully open with veteran journeymen who could be taken out whenever necessary for these young prospects to give them the innings they need.
Yeah, absolutely. It always did feel like there was kind of an eye to the future when it came to how, you know, started the direction of the starting rotation. But at the same time, you know, DL Hall, former top five prospect of the Orioles, still young. The Brewers very much believe in him. Colin Ray, you know, I think they saw enough in him to believe that he could take a step forward. And so far in a very short amount of time, but also during the spring, he has. I think they believe that he can be a very solid pitcher for them. I'll definitely agree with Jacob Junis. I think he's kind of a, you know, little bit of patchwork. There were questions in the beginning of whether, you know, could he end up as a very good bullpen arm? I think you pay that much money to him up front and you want to start off with him as a starter, but there was always that option, you know, to work with him in a couple different ways. Same thing with Joe Ross until some injuries happened. I felt like he was ticketed for the bullpen. So you're taking a chance on a veteran with him, but I think there are a couple guys, particularly pointing to DL Hall and Colin Ray. I think that it feels like the organization has a lot of belief behind those two that they could be more than just, you know, patching up a rotation. And it feels weird to say that about Colin Ray in particular, because at least, you know, Hall had some recent prospect status, but yeah, they seem to have, that's the whole reason why
he Hall has a higher ceiling. Absolutely. Yeah.
100%. But Ray was the first offseason signing. They wanted to bring him back right away for a reason. Yeah. They see something in him. And so far he's repaying them very well. And he's, again, in a very short sample size, he's looked even a little bit more solid than last year, where he was more of a, you know, keep the rotation afloat thing. I can see a couple of these guys working out, and that's all you need is a couple of them to work out, because you have enough of that in next wave. I know Gasser's out right now, but he's started throwing again. So before we know it, he'll be back pitching in games. Aaron Ashby, I still think his start was very encouraging despite the errors causing it to kind of blow up a little bit. You know, to see him back and see him, you know, doing well, I think there's a lot to work with there. You point out again, Rodriguez, Mazurowski, who knows, maybe we see Jansen Chung at some point. I'm not saying he's part of the rotation of the future, but there's still, you only need a couple of the pieces to work out so that the rest can be filled in by that next wave. And then again, it explains why they didn't go super pricey on a rotation arm or two, especially because you saw the prices that some of these guys were getting.
Oh, yeah.
Although, as we see, I saw today, Scott Boris is going to be making less, not any money in the future off of one of those clients as a result of what happened during the offseason. So it was really weird offseason for some of those guys. Did Lorenzen ever end up signing?
Yes, he did.
Okay,
I forgot who with, actually, but finally went somewhere.
But yeah. Snell went super late. Montgomery went super late. Like,
It was Montgomery was looking for $100+ million. I mean, he was coming off a dominant run to the World Series with the Texas Rangers, and he could only get a 1-year, $25 million deal. Really?
Right.
Yeah, I don't blame him for firing Boris. I mean, this is what Montgomery did there with Boris, firing him after that kind of debacle, is exactly what Corbin Burns did after his arbitration debacle. I mean, he lost his arbitration case, as we all remember. He fired his agency, CAA, shortly after that, and then he signed with Boris. So Corbin Burns is now a Boris guy. We'll see how that goes for him this offseason. But, I mean, if he keeps pitching the way that he is, you'd think someone would give him big money. I mean, Burns has a 1.93 ERA through his first three starts, and he's just looking as good as ever over there in Baltimore. So he'll get his chance for a revenge game on Sunday. This is going to be a fun weekend series between the Brewers and the Orioles. And it's been a fun season so far because Brewers are winning. They are right there, but they are in second place in the NL Central. They are behind a team that no one expected to be there in the standings at this point. I mean, really at any point in the season, but they are right there with the Pirates atop the NL Central. The Pirates are 9-4. They've had a little bit of success so far early on here. So
wait, that puts us in first place now, according to the standings.
They're tied for first place. The Brewers have played two fewer games than Pittsburgh.
I guess
Brewers are 8-3. Pirates are 9-4. One win, one loss difference. But still, Brewers have a better winning percentage because they've played fewer games. Because you got the rain out, you had a whole bunch of off days early on. So we shall see. But things will even out there towards the end of the season. The Cubs are down in third place. The Cubs just lost 2 of 3 to the Padres. Tough break there for their manager. And you love to see this. The St. Louis Cardinals are back in last place.
Yes.
They're back in last place in the NL Central. So there's that. There's your good news to end this week's podcast. The St. Louis Cardinals are in last place in the NL Central once again. You love to see it. All right, that'll do it for us. Be sure to check out – oh, go ahead, Matt.
I would say I just had one little bit. You know who has the longest winning streak in the majors right now?
Who?
The Kansas City Royals, obviously.
The Kansas City
Royals. Seven games.
Seven-game winning streak. 9-4. They are up there competing with Cleveland in the very hotly contested AL Central. Meanwhile, the Chicago White Sox have 2 wins on the air.
Well, there we go. There's the part we expected. All right.
Yep. That's on par for the course. There is my golf
Masters
phrase of the day here on Masters weekend. Absolutely. I will be watching to see what Tiger Woods does, and that is about it. That is the extent of my golf attention span, pretty much.
Same.
Yeah, me and most of the rest of the country just, what's Tiger Woods doing? Okay, doing good? Not doing good? All right, we'll see. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Be sure to check out ReviewingTheBrew.com for all the amazing content that we put up there all the time. Lots of great stuff going up on the site. And be sure to continue to follow us on Twitter. Follow the podcast on Twitter here at @ColeBrew_pod. Follow the both of us, and be sure to follow Reviewing the Brew on Twitter as well. Because we are always having a bunch of fun over there. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and get your listening done there or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow us and give us a nice 5-star review. We always like seeing those. That'll do it for us. We will see you next time for another edition of the Cold Brew Podcast.